We would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Bread and Ink Cafe, located at 3610 Southeast Hawthorne, serving the community breakfast, lunch, and dinner for more than 30 years. Lunch was provided by Tandoor Kitchen, located at 406 Southwest Oak, serving North and South Indian dishes every day with choices for vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free diets. Dinner was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 3570 Southeast Division Street, a locally owned neighborhood joint offering pizza, pinball, and cold beer since the spring of 2014.
Well, good morning, all you Empire fighters out there. This is Per Fogring, and we have a real special guest today. Our guest is Richard Heinberg, who is a senior fellow at the Post-Carbon Institute, author of numerous books like The Party's Over and The End of Growth, kind of says it all right there, but his latest book is called Afterburn, Society Beyond Fossil Fuels. So, Richard Heinberg, welcome to KABU.
Hey, Per, it's good to be with you.
Oh, boy, you know, there's so much in this book. Hard to know where to start, but why don't we start? The second chapter is about the gross society. That's kind of a pretty basic point right there. The gross society and E-R-O-E-I.
Right, right. Well, the point I'm making in that chapter is that I think we're fooling ourselves these days on many fronts when we look at the gross statistics about the economy and especially about energy.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look under the hood, we find a very different situation. With energy, for example, we have a happy story in the U.S. that says that we no longer have to worry about imported fuels. We're going to be energy self-sufficient. We're producing way more oil than we were a few years ago, tons of natural gas, and so everything is fine. What I suggest in that chapter, The Gross Society, is when you look under the hood, you realize that the situation is actually very different. Almost all of the new production that we've seen in the U.S. of both oil and natural gas has been produced through hydrofracturing and horizontal drilling, and that takes a lot of energy and it takes a lot of money. And if you subtract the energy and money that we're investing in these projects, it doesn't look that good. Most of the companies that are specializing in fracking are, in fact, losing money on production, making nothing on profit from sales of product, and the amount of energy that has to be invested in the process is much higher than the energy that used to be invested in oil and natural gas production. So again, you know, you look at the surface situation, which is what we're encouraged to do by politicians and Wall Street, and everything looks rosy. But in fact, we've started exploiting lower and lower grade resources, and this is true for the tar sands of Canada as well. And as we do, we have to spend as a society more and more of our energy just getting energy. So we have less energy at the end of the day to spend on the things that energy does for us, like
to actually do the work,
agriculture, manufacturing, and everything else. Mm-hmm. And in fact, our society is like a little wind up toy that's running down. Only we don't see it because we're addicted to the happy story.
Well, you know, there's two articles very recently. One is about how the, I think this is in the London Telegraph, how the U.S. is planning to flood Europe with natural gas to combat Russia, you know. And the other one was very interesting, that in Alberta, the new Democratic Party won the provincial election. There's an upset over the Conservatives, and this, I guess, is very important because that's where all this tar sands oil comes from. And apparently the big issue there is that Alberta has been letting these big mining companies off the hook as far as any kind of, share of the profits goes.
That's right. Yeah, very interesting stories. The U.S. is not going to be exporting natural gas in any quantity. Right now, the U.S. is still a net natural gas importer. We import more than we export. And that's not likely to change. We've done some original research at Post Carbon Institute on U.S. natural gas and tight oil production. We hired the data on all 80,000 currently producing tight oil and shale gas wells, and we looked at the location of each well, the initial production rate, the evolution of production over time. What we found is that these wells tend to deplete very rapidly. Within the first year of completion, a typical shale gas or tight oil well sees its production declined by about 70%. That's why they have to keep drilling and drilling and drilling, and that's part of the expense of the operation. Also, within the large geographic areas where these resources are present, there are only small core areas, usually a county or two or three counties in extent, where the resource is abundant enough to be profitable to produce. And that's where the companies have concentrated their drilling. And there are limited numbers of drilling locations within those sweet spots, and they're being drilled out very rapidly. So we see U.S. shale gas production peaking and starting to decline within the next 3 years, most likely, certainly before the end of this decade. So the likelihood of U.S. becoming a natural gas exporter is extremely low, and if it happens, it'll be very temporary, and the amounts will be small. But again, you know, we love the happy story that the U.S. can be this this resource powerhouse to rival Russia. Ain't going to happen, though.
Well, you know, in your first chapter, you talk about how your peak oil predictions, mainly, you know, from limits to growth, that they're actually pretty much on the mark. We didn't foresee the tight oil, the tight oil boom, but you know that's tapering off, as you just said. And there's a question of, are prices going to are they going to stay low? Are they going to go high again? That seems to be a big issue right now.
Yeah. Prices are impossible to predict because they depend on so many factors. But if you just look at actual production, U.S. oil production has started declining again after the tight oil boom of the last few years. And if you look at the forecasts that were being made 10, 15 years ago, all of the responsible agencies, the U.S. Department of Energy, International Energy Agency, and on down, were saying that by now we would have maybe 20 million barrels a day of oil more than we're actually getting out of the ground. World regular conventional oil production peaked around 2005, hasn't increased since then, and all of the increase has come from expensive to produce unconventional sources that are also much more environmentally problematic, like the tar sands, like tight oil. And now we're seeing a turnaround in the unconventional area. So, you know, the folks who were saying that world oil production peak would happen around 2015, some really smart petroleum geologists like the French geologist Jean Lairer are turning out to be probably just about right.
Mm-hmm. I think now we're going to have to sort of turn the conversation to how we can sustain this station, because this is where you're hearing all this interesting, important information. So Lynn is out there.
Yeah, I am. Hi, Pear. And this is fascinating. It is so nice to get this sort of information that is not, as you would say, poopaganda. Thank you very much for that, Pear. And it's the
source term.
Yes, it is. 877-500-5266 is the way you can call, make a contribution to KBOO right now. Keep us sustainable. That is up to you, people who are listening. Put your money where your ears are. It's really a good time to do that. We don't have commercials, as you know, but we have moments when we get contributions from you to keep this station going, because it is. It is a worker-owned co-op in many ways, just because we are a nonprofit, and we are here to get to keep the radio station, the foundation, running. That is it. We are frugal. We are fabulous. And you can contribute to us being that, as zillions and zillions of people have this morning. Franco from Portland, Philip from Portland, Evelyn from Portland, Vanessa from Milwaukee, Ashanti from Portland, Pam from Portland. Running from White Salmon. I want some folks from Salem to call in Corvallis. I think it's, we want to hear from you. Represent. How about some folks from Vancouver or Paris, France? I would like to hear from some folks from Paris, France. Amy is renewing from Portland. Benton renewed from Portland. James renewed from Salem. Very good. Someone from Salem, just like I wanted. It's time. This is the time to do it. We come, like we said, this is like a short. We're going to be here for a couple weeks doing this. It's time to do it now. You know, you listen to Pear's amazing information that he gets out every other week for us, 877-500-5266. This is the time to do it. This is the time to keep information flowing. Know what's really going on. It's never been more important to know that, and we at KBOO News and Public Affairs are here to give that to you, 877-500-5266. And you can get Mr. Heinberg's book, Afterburn Society Beyond Fossil Fuels, What a Wonderful Thought, for a $60 minimum donation right now. Call in at 877-500-5266 and get this book. $5 a month. You can do it.
Well, you know, I think we're heading into a do-it-yourself world, and KBOO is a kind of a do-it-yourself radio station. We don't need we don't need corporations to get out
We've
the news
people.
And information. We can actually do it ourselves.
Here. Yes,
human-powered radio.
That's
what
right.
a concept!
Well, you know that guy on. Unfortunately, though, the guy on the hamster wheel that kept our electricity running has gone off to do bigger and better things, and we need money to make electricity going. We need things to keep us the bare bones moving that we are. We need more duct tape. What can I say? We need more duct tape. 877-500-5266. Because we are a great and important, a wonderful community resource. I know you feel that. You're listening. 877-500-5266. Come on down. Be part of the fun.
Do it now. You do it yourself. Do it. Go to the phone. Just come on down here. See us. See us in operation. We are accessible, you know. We don't hide behind corporate desks and doorways and things like that. Anyway, back to Richard Heinberg. You know, one thing is kind of clear to me over the years that this whole peak oil analysis is it's really evolving, which is, you know, that's what science
right.
does. And
yeah, you know, as you pointed out, you know, very few of us foresaw the tight oil boom, and I think a lot of us had the assumption that as oil production started to falter, the inevitable result would be soaring oil prices. And it's turning out that's not necessarily the case. You know, where as demand is destroyed because the economy begins to seize up, then actually oil prices could plummet and in the context of lower production. It seems counterintuitive, but it's part of the peak oil dynamic.
Well, what happens then? I've been wondering about this. If a lot of people cannot afford oil at the price it is now, and it's like the price is low that drillers can't afford to drill, but people can't afford to buy the oil, and it's but we need oil. So what happens when people do without? I mean, can whole nations do without? What happens to them?
Well, sooner or later, we will all be doing without it. Mm-hmm. After all, it's a non-renewable resource. The problem is that we've created systems that run on liquid fuels. And we're talking not just about automobiles, but trucks, ships, airplanes. And it's going to be pretty hard to substitute. We tried an experiment over the last few years in this country with biofuels, mostly ethanol. And currently about 40% of our corn crop goes to making ethanol. And 40% of our corn crop is not enough to run all of our cars by a long shot. And yet, you know, we still need to eat. And growing all of that corn is ruining the soil and taking up a tremendous amount of land. So we're not going to be able to substitute oil with biofuels. We can have electric cars, but electric airliners, not going to happen. So, you know, we're in for a different future as we move beyond petroleum. It's going to be a less mobile future. We're not going to be, you know, going to the airport and then being halfway across the world a day later. That's a phenomenon of the late 20th century that I think future generations will look back on with some wonder. But we should be making other arrangements now. You know, how can we relocalize our production and consumption so that the transition to a post-petroleum future is not characterized by, you know, simple economic collapse?
Well, I know you write about four scenarios. The first of is sort of like this frantic business as usual scenario, where that would just leads to a dead end. But all the other scenarios actually lead to local provision of basics for everybody.
That's right. One way that governments could deal with our situation, which is generally one of contraction. I mean, societies expand, but they also contract. And we've been expanding for decades now. And all of the signs suggest that we're entering a period during the remainder of this century of general economic contraction. Now, one way that societies can deal with that is to deliberately reduce the extremes of economic inequality. You know, say, okay, this is going to be a tough time. We're all in it together, and we'll make sure that nobody is profiteering on this, and we'll make sure that everybody has the basics. You know, the food, shelter, and what it takes to get by, health care, and so on. That's one way societies could get through this bottleneck, and it's certainly preferable to the path we're choosing right now, the business as usual path, which you mentioned a moment ago, which is one where basically it's everyone for themselves, and those who have the prior advantage of wealth are then able to leverage that and shove a lot of other people right off the playing board altogether. That's not going to end very well. Historically, if you look back at societies in similar situations, the ones that have chosen that path have ended up with revolution and general misery, lots of social violence and intersocial violence, or war. So a better solution would be a more even distribution and everyone tightening their belts together and saying, okay, we can do this. But even at that, we're looking at a gradual reduction in total amount of energy available to society to do the kinds of things we want to do. And as we become less mobile, that's going to ultimately translate to a more locally organized society, local production for local consumption. That could be very good for us. We've paid a lot for the phenomenon of globalization over the last couple of decades, and it hasn't been all that good for the average person, loss of high-paying manufacturing jobs in this country and so on. So there could be some advantages from localization, but once again, you know, it's we're going to do it better if we plan for it, if we get out ahead of the curve and start promoting local institutions right now, not only local food, but local nonprofit banking, i.e. credit unions, and all the rest.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on who does this kind of downsizing, whether the government does it for us or whether we do it ourselves. It's sort of the difference between maybe small community farms and gardens on one hand and, say, big prison farms or welfare plantations on the other hand.
Right. Yeah. Clearly, you know, if we design the transition ourselves, we're going to enjoy it a lot more than if we leave it to someone else to design it for us. And there are a lot of people already doing that. That's the exciting part about this. Mm-hmm. If you look around the world and see places where greenhouse gas emissions are being cut the fastest, where people are adjusting most successfully to the new economy, it's where people have taken matters into their own hands. The transition towns, for example, there are hundreds of them all over the world. These initiatives are formulated at the grassroots level, and people don't wait for city or state officials or national officials to lead the way. They organize neighborhood by neighborhood to reduce carbon emissions and find ways to meet basic human needs as locally as possible, creating local food hubs and all the rest.
Well, that's kind of like KBOO, and right now we have to
it's totally like
a little
KBOO.
Do-it-yourself financing here, and I hope
Absolutely.
We are doing I hope we are doing it ourselves.
We are doing it ourselves, and I saw Susan Griffin talk a while ago, and she said one of the biggest denials in the world is waiting for the government, waiting for somebody else to do it for you. So that is where we are with your amazing guest this morning, Pear, and that is where we are with KBOO. It is time to call up. Give us a contribution, but it's not sort of giving us. It's contributing to your community. This is your community radio station where we are here to inform you. If it's going to be something that's going to be called we need more local participation, and we have got oodles of local participation here at KBOO. It's something we love to do. As we become a more local economy, we need information that way, and we are a purveyor of that. People come to us with their local information, and we disseminate it out to the world because of the World Wide Web these days. And one way you can contribute is to go to kboo.fm, or please call 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO, and do it now. Now is the time. There is no time like the present, as they say. Kenneth from Gresham, and KW from Portland, Carol from Portland, Bev from Sandy, Valerie from McMinnville. We're starting to get outlying areas. This is good. I still want to call from Paris, France. I'll call or New York. You're hearing us out there on the web, kboo.fm, or call 877-500-5266. Get a copy of this book. Afterburn, Society Beyond Fossil Fuels. What a wonderful thought. For a $60 minimum donation, that can be yours, absolutely all yours. And you can share that information with your friends. You can get a 4 gigabyte flash drive full of news and public affairs from this station. 877-500-5266. That's with a $75 minimum donation. I believe that's $6.25 a month. You can spread it out. We love sustaining members. We love all members. We really love sustaining members because that sustains us
on
a monthly basis.
That's what keeps our station sustainable.
That's right.
And you can come on down and see us too.
Absolutely, Pear.
20 Southeast 8th. Come on in. The door's open. Just come on in and say hi. You can see where your money is going.
All these faces made for radio down here.
That's right. Yes. So because it's visiting day, we have our clothes on, you know.
Shh, don't tell people. But every day is visiting day here at Cable. You can always come on down. We are always happy to see folks. Come down, be a member, see where your money goes, see what frugal, happy people we are. But this thing, you know, this is about, we are about information, we are about community, and we're about making it fun. So come on down. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. 20 Southeast 8th is the address, or kboo.fm. These are all the ways to do it. Get yourself a copy of this amazing book, Afterburn Society Beyond Fossil Fuels, for a $60 minimum contribution. That's $5 a month. It's good to read.
It is. There's a lot of good information in there. And I think in the time we have remaining, I don't want this program to end without exploring one very interesting topic, Richard. And I think it's in Chapter 13, and it's sort of, I don't know, I call it knowledge depletion. Where we go from print to digital, and guess what digital depends on?
Right. Yeah, this is a controversial subject, you know. A lot of people think that we can't even possibly envision a future without the internet and without digital information. But, you know, all of this is so recent, and it's so dependent on the kind of far-flung, energy-intensive infrastructure that we've built. And it's all quite fragile. You know, the experts are perfectly aware that a single solar flare, similar to the Carrington event of the mid-19th century, could wipe out all of the basically all of the electronic and electric infrastructure of the planet. And that sort of solar flare happens about once a century. So, you know, until we find some way of shielding all of this stuff that we've built, that we depend upon for electronic communications and all the rest, it's all quite vulnerable. And so, you know, we really should be providing some redundancy for all of the amazing achievements we've made over the past number of years that are currently entirely digitized. The scientific information, the medical information, the history that's been written, and all the rest. You know, if right now the web goes down, all of that is lost, and future archaeologists would judge us only by, you know, what bits and pieces we manage to leave behind that are legible. I would hate to see that happen. You know, the best of human achievements are really worthy of being preserved, and we've got to find a way of preserving them more durably than on CDs and hard drives.
Well, I think everybody probably has had a horrible experience at their computer of seeing a whole lot of work just kind of vanish very quickly, you know, in just one instant with not a trace left, you know. I mean, this is the amazing thing. I mean, you know, yeah, libraries burn down and things like that, but, you know, there are traces and books, so where, you know, we find all sorts of ancient information, you know, that's still around. But boy, when if a computer goes down, there's nothing at all then, is there?
Yeah, and it's a huge vulnerability, because of course we've put all of our financial information on these networks as well. So if the network goes down altogether, then basically we're having to start from a very low level of functionality as a society. And it doesn't have to be that way. We could take a few steps back and start relying on things like writing letters and the mail and keeping records on in redundant ways that involve hard copies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's It's common sense, but nobody's doing it.
Don't throw away your books yet, folks, and get a few more books like the one we are offering right here at KBOO by Richard Heinberg, Afterburn. So, Richard, thank you very much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure, Per. Thank you.
And stay tuned for Air Cascadia.
Yeah, Air Cascadia coming right up on KBOO Portland here on your Thursday morning in the middle of our membership drive. Join us in 15 minutes as we go to fight the flashpoints at 10:15. Today featuring another installment of the Battle for Public Education in the 21st Century. And we hear Nora Barrows Friedman with her weekly podcast on Occupied Palestine. At 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with the founder of the Between the Covers program, Sharon Wood Wortman, a.k.a. The Bridge Lady, about her new book, The Big and Awesome Bridges of Portland and Vancouver. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is law professor David Trout, author of The Price of Paradise, The Cost of Inequality, and A Vision for a More Equitable America. But first, stick around. Chris Andre is waiting in the wings with Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. Next on KBOO.
KBOO members, what's your vision for your community radio station? How do you see the mission of KBOO? The KBOO Foundation has a programming charter and strategic plan, and now it's time for a mission and vision statement to help direct our policy and inspire the community. From now through May 15th, we're inviting member input on our website. Visit kboo.fm/survey2015 to take our survey. You can also read up on our programming charter and other guidelines and find frequently asked questions at the same page, kboo.fm/survey2015. Or you can pick up a copy of the survey at the station. And on Saturday, May 30th, we'll be hosting a mission and vision retreat for members. If you'd like to attend, get in touch with Monica Beamer and RSVP. The email address is monica@kboo.org. Thank you for being an active member of KBOO.